Can you tell us a little bit about the programming throughout the day? You started it off, and then who else did you have there during your time?
Yeah, I started off, and there was a fella on the air named Bill Walton. I don't know where he is today. We had a fella named Jerry Spinn, who later went to Cleveland, became a PD, and he's passed on. Bob Calvert was there. He went to Norfolk and became a program director, and he's long gone. Buddy Charles is out in California, retired. He was a youngster, had a teenage show. There was a fella named Bob Truer that did the news. I still remember that. And we had Steve Carroll, who right now lives about 40 miles from me. Bill Evenson did the news there and later went to NBC and Mutual. So we had a lot of great talent there. I mean, those guys all went on to do big things. One funny experience, we were in the Dock Street Theater then, which I think is the oldest theater in the country, so they told me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hot day. We didn't have air conditioning, by the way. And it was a hot day, and I was looking out of the window, second floor, the Dock Street Theater on Church Street. I was just opening the window to get some air, and there was a guy down there taking pictures. So he waved to me, and I waved to him, and about 5 months later, I'm at a drugstore down at the corner, and I'm going through some picture postcards in the rack, and here's a picture of the Dock Street Theater and me waving out of the window. The guy was a postcard photographer. I still have that card. Made me very famous, you know.
Probably didn't make you very rich, though.
No. Got no royalties, got no nothing, you know. But it was just a great time, and the audience was just amazing. I used to take calls on the air. It was really terrific. And Bill Evenson was the news guy in the morning, and we had a feud going all the time. And we have been friends, I guess, 50 years since then. He's out in California, retired. He's doing some movies and some directing and some movie writing. And we talk probably once a week. But I made a lot of great friends down there. And TMA was just a huge number one at that time. I was starting to tell you that I was over at Channel 2, Sonny Goldberg at J.M. Goldberg. They bought the late movie, and I did the commercials for the in between the films. We had a late movie that went on like 11 o'clock.
Did you have to do those live?
Oh, yeah, live. We had no teleprompters or anything in those days. There were not even cards. You know, you just tried to remember what you were saying and talked about the furniture. And, of course, they didn't deliver any furniture to the set, so we just had to say, you know, that we had living rooms. And I mean, there were no living rooms in the studio, so we just had living room sets, dining room sets. They did have a refrigerator, and they had a little fella out there who worked at the TV station. He was probably under 5 feet tall. And I took all the shelves out of the refrigerator and put him in there. He got in there and crouched down, and I held the door, just a little bit of air for him to breathe. The refrigerator looked closed, and I said, folks, you can put anything in these huge refrigerators, and opened the door. He stepped out and said, hi, folks, and walked off and totally ignored him, didn't he? Like he wasn't even there, you know. And we did funny commercials. The phone would ring in the middle of the commercial, and I would pick it up, and I would say, no, Sonny, we don't take requests, and hung up, you know. So I just love to do off-the-wall stuff like that. I just like to run a hi-ho, folks, come to the fair type radio station, you know. And of course, things have changed so much today, it's totally a different ballgame today. I think, you know, that kind of stuff. Left the building many years ago.
What'd you do after you left Baltimore?
Well, after I left Baltimore or TMA?
Well, TMA, you went to Baltimore.
After I left Baltimore, went to Boston and worked in Boston for 3 or 4 years. And matter of fact, emceed the first Beatles concert when they were in the USA. Right after the Ed Sullivan Show, they came to the Boston Garden.
What was that like?
Well, I couldn't hear anything for 3 days. It was I never met them, just, you know, just backstage. And the funny thing on that show, they had a couple of what they call opening acts. We had Jackie DeShannon and some other people, Bobby V, introduced them. They just booed them right off, not because they were bad, but the whole crowd was just screaming, Beatles, 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 and you could hear nothing, and they would sing one line and just walk off. And finally, you just, you know, waited and just said, the Beatles, and they came on. I never met them. I just introduced them, but, you know, I don't think I was within 100 feet of them the whole time.
What station were you with in Boston?
I was with WMEX.
Oh, okay.
You know, and, the good guys type thing.
Oh, yeah. What was the guy who ran that radio station?
Mac Richmond.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are stories about Mac, and they're all true. Yeah, I sent you a copy of my book, and it's in the book, you know. Everything is in there, and it's all true, the stories about Mac. But here again, I was just very, very lucky. I seemed to be at the right stations at the right time. You know, you can be in a city with 15 stations, and if you're at the wrong station, there's just no way you're going to get anywhere. I just happened to get very lucky and be at the right stations at the right time. We had, you know, Woo Woo Ginsberg and Jerry Williams and J.J. Jeffries. We had a lot of top people at MEX, and these people were in Charlotte with me. I was in Charlotte for almost 6 years and had a great time in Charlotte at a station called Big Ways.
Oh, yeah, that was a great radio station.
Legend. Stan Kaplan was the manager in Boston, and when he bought Charlotte, he called me down, and I went with him. So I've been very lucky to be with the right people, I guess, at the right times. But we had a lot of success at Waze. But I think the first really major job I had outside of Cleveland was WTMA, because when we went down there, TMA was not much of a power. In wattage it was, but it didn't really have the listeners. It didn't really have that much of a power. There was a fella named Hank Usick that I worked at in Cumberland, and he was a kind of salesman that just, he sold me great. And when Chuck Smith called me, I was in Cleveland, and he said, "Do you know where Charleston, South Carolina is?" And I said, "Not really." And he said, blah, blah, and he offered me this job. And I said, "You know," I said, "I've got a funny feeling." I said, "Where's Hank Usick?" And he says, "He's out running a station in California." I said, "Well, if you can get Hank," I said, "I'll come down." We didn't even talk salary. And he said, "That's a funny thing, because I just get off the phone with Hank," and he said, "If you can get Jack, I'll come there."
Wow.
So we went there together, and we just had a great, great time. It was, I guess, three, 4 great years for me.
Do you remember much about your competition in Charleston, the other stations on the air?
I know some personalities that were there at the time, but I don't remember who was on in the morning. Jay Mullen was on one of the other stations there, and it was a Ken Kleiss. I think a name Ken Kleiss comes to mind. And I don't remember, too, but there was a fellow on TV that Tony Glenn was there. Gosh, I don't remember too many of the other people at the other stations, because I never, George Wilson was on a station called WOKE.
Mm-hmm.
And he later went to TMA, I think, in the late 50s, early 60s, and went on to become one of the big PDs out in L.A. I know Drayton Hasty had Channel 2 at the time.
Yeah, WCSC was one of the stations, WCSC
right,
Radio.
Right, they were the CBS station.
And
I think Jay Mullen was over there, but I think Jay was at TMA maybe before I came there also.
And WQSN, I think, was 1450.
QSN, right, and the TV station was USN.
Yes.
Channel 2.
Yes.
Yeah, QSN, right, correct. And I think there was a another station there. Could it be PAL?
Yes, it could be.
Okay, I remember that.
Yep, yep,
of course,
yep.
Now, you got to remember, John, this was way before FM.
You're doing pretty good there.
Well, but you see, the competition wasn't like it is today. Today, you know, you've got not only the FM stations and the AM stations all battling, and I figure you've got 25, 30 stations in that area. Plus, you've got TV, and then you've got computers, you've got cable, television. You know, there's so much for people to do and watch now that I think it's a lot tougher now to do anything than it was in those days. Those days, they had 4 radio stations to listen to. That was it. The entertainment hours are just split up now. I mean, it's very tough. Before, people used to just live by the radio. To me, radio now is mostly in cars, I would think, and I don't know if there's any surveys for cars, so I don't really believe much of these Arbitron ratings, because I don't know. I don't ever turn the radio on at home. I listen to it in the car, but not at home.
And yeah, you can break down the Arbitron ratings by at home, at work, or in the car.
You can do it in the car.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because nobody has ever knocked on my car window at a red light and saying, "What station are you listening to?"
Well, don't get me started on the Arbitron rating system.
No, we had Hooper and Pulse in my time.
And what was that like?
Well, it was, you know, whenever they took a Hooper or a Pulse rating, that was it. I mean, you lived and died by that. And I still remember Stan Kaplan at Waze. We were like number one in 36 counties, and we had one bad rating period where the ratings dropped. And he called a meeting for that morning, and all the salesmen figured, oh, well, they're all going to get fired. And I figured, well, I'm programming, and I'm going to get fired. And Stan came in whistling, happy, and everybody is panicked because they figured he's really going to scream and raise the roof. And he slammed down a package that he had hot off the press from the printer, and he says, here's our new rate card. We've increased the rate 10%, and we're all looking at him. One guy panicked. He says, increase the rate 10%? We dropped down in the ratings. And Stan says, that's only the way you're going to read it. He says, you don't read that. We went up in the ratings. And he says, when you go out to see your clients, you tell them. And they say, you went down in a rate. He says, are you kidding? Here's our new rate card. We just raised the rates 10%. Why would we raise the rates if we went down? Don't believe what those other stations are telling you.
That's a great strategy.
So you learn these different things as you go through life. You know, it's amazing. But like I say, the humor's left the building now. I find it tough to listen to radio stations, to listen to 5 guys at one time, each one trying to be funnier than the other guy,
yeah.
You know, and really trying, just seem to try so hard to do this.
Do you remember much about the WTMA studios and offices in detail, or has it been so long ago? What was the control room like?
Yeah, well, I remember Chuck Smith's office was downstairs, and they had the bookkeeping office downstairs, but upstairs was the stairway, and we had the studio upstairs without any air conditioning, and a little newsroom, and a bathroom, and I guess probably a table to sit down and have a Coke or a sandwich or something. That was about it.
Not even a production studio?
I don't think so. I think we used the newsroom for production.
Oh, okay.
We must have had a production studio because we did do taping, but we had these great big reel-to-reel Ampex tapes and, of course, the 16-inch turntables that we played transcriptions on, because if the commercial commercials came in, the national accounts, you know, like Stand Back or Headache Powder or something, they were on these 16-inch transcriptions.
Wow.
We had these huge tone arms. They were about a foot and a half long to play these big transcriptions. And, of course, these were 78 records. You have to remember that. They were no 45s at that time.
So this is long before the advent of tape cartridges.
Oh, yeah. We just had reel-to-reel tape, and we had the MagnaCorder little brown suitcase-type tape machines. And some of the tapes were like 3-inch reels, and you'd have to spin them and cue them to get the commercial ready to go. Totally different than it was today. Everything was manual. There were no carts. This is way before 8-tracks, even. And we had the big RCA boom microphones and the old Gates boards, and you probably remember those. I still do radio commercials every day, and I do a couple that are on the air there in Charleston, but I don't want to give anybody free commercials. And, you know, so it's, I guess that keeps me in the business, you know. And I had some wonderful experiences in Nashville. I never really lived there. I had an apartment there. We had a record company. We did the TV albums. You see them on TV. 20 great hits of, call 1-800, Visa, MasterCard, not sold in stores. We did Willie and Waylon and Tanya Tucker and these kind of people. When I was in Baltimore, I happened to pick up a kid who was 15 years old named Johnny Cymbal. And we had a million seller in 63 called Mr. Bassman. It was the first record, had the bomb, bomb, bomb in it, that kind of stuff. So we were pretty lucky there, and had a hit 10 years before that in Cleveland called Oh Happy Day, which was a big record for us. Later came out and was a hit again 10 years later. But then I had three stations of my own over the years. Started out in 1971. I had one in Missouri and sold that and bought one in California. Sold that and bought one in Cocoa Beach, Florida. So yeah, I've been, I guess, the whole gamut, you know.
So besides your radio career on the air, you owned radio stations and got a chance to dabble in the music business.
Yeah, really enjoyed the music business. I sold a lot of masters, cut a lot of doo-wop stuff in Baltimore, and had quite a few things on the charts. And, you know, so it went hand in hand with the radio business. It's all one and the same.
And you're recording commercials today from your home studio.
Yeah, I have what they call an ISDN line. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And I do commercials for agencies across the country. And, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, you can do a commercial with somebody in L.A. the same time on the phone line. Only it doesn't sound like the telephone. It's a special line that works through the phone, but it's, Sinatra did an album, I guess, 10 years ago called Duets. Had Tony Bennett, Barbara Streisand, all these people in it. Nobody was in the same studio at the time that they were harmonizing. They did it all on the ISDN line. One guy was in Spain, somebody else was in Miami. So the ISDN line is a pretty big thing for me. I don't have to drive to studios. I just stay home. I've got a soundproof studio here, and it's all digital, and you know, we can do CDs and DATs and whatever, and that's what I do all day. The problem is that you're on call all the time. We don't get somebody to call Monday and say, can we do a commercial on Thursday? They call on Monday at 11 o'clock and say, can you do one in 15 minutes because it needs to be on the air in Dallas by 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
So you just have to stay on call.
Well, it's good that you are able to do that. I'm sure you get a lot of business because you're always available.
That's the thing. You know, I used to have to drive to 7 or 8 studios a day, and now with this ISDN line, you really don't have to go anywhere. Even TV, you don't have to read the picture anymore. You know, this is 8 seconds, this is 7 seconds, so you just do it that way. And, you know, the experience pays off. So I've been there. It's been probably almost a 50-year career for me or more. So it's, if I do it all over again, that's it. You know what you're here for, what the Lord put you here for. Like you, I mean, I'm sure you actually live and enjoy what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And you wouldn't want to do anything else, you know. And we're just lucky to be able to do what we did. And I think I was in it at a great time. And I'm just very fortunate to be in it at a great time and see how the music has changed, how radio has changed. I mean, the artists we played, rock and roll, you don't hear those today. And I've just got a great collection, and every once in a while I sit there and listen to this stuff, but you don't hear any of that stuff. I mean, a Goldie station today probably plays from the 80s on up. Like they said, you know, a classic automobile has to be 25 years old, which would mean that a 1978 car would be a classic today. And to me, an old guy like me, a classic would be a 1929. I had a 1929 Model A Ford. You know, that's a classic day.
I really enjoyed the Bud Room that you sent me. That was great.
That was a funny thing. And, you know, I forgot all about that. And I was just looking through some old tapes of Bud Room. What is that? It's a WTMA. And this was something we did 5:45 to 6. And like you say, I just enjoyed it. So I came back to do it. And we just played honky-tonk music at that time. And I tried to make it sound like we were broadcasting from a live tavern. And every once in a while, we'd use some names of some of the store owners and sponsors there and try to put them on a little bit and just try to, you know, use the voices and just make it a little entertaining for 15 minutes on the way home. But Budweiser bought it, so it was a good thing. I don't remember how how long it was on, but it's just some great memories because it's different. And I was always trying to do something that was different. I figured anybody can play records.
I tell you what, I was impressed with the production, considering you were doing it all live and you didn't have tapes, and you were doing it all basically with a bunch of turntables.
That's it, two turntables. No carts, just two turntables.
Wow.
That's all. But I used to love to use a lot of sound effects and things like that, you know. And to me, it's all theater of the mind. I guess my idol was a guy named Fred Allen years ago, and he had a lot of actors, and he used the theory that he brought the telephone ring and the door knock and the door open to radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to try to imitate those actors and his voices when I was 15 years old. I used to think to myself, he can hire me, and he won't have to pay all those actors. I had no idea what was going on at the time, but I learned quick. It was quite a setback when I went down to WITH and said, I'll save your station, you know. but, you know, in those days, you had to have 10, 12 years experience because they wouldn't even listen to you. I mean, there's no way that you could just go down there and say you want a job at the radio station. Well, where have you worked before and how many years experience have you had? Unless you're in a very, very small station. And there were not that many radio stations in those days. You got thousands today, but you didn't have that. Little towns didn't have that many radio stations because they all carried the network. There was very, very little local stuff, nothing. I mean, you read the newspaper if you wanted to know, you know, about an accident locally or something. They didn't have traffic or any of that kind of stuff. You know, this is a totally different ballgame. This was back in the bare-knuckle days of radio.